Take your Bibles, please, and go to Hebrews chapter 10. What I'd like to share with you this morning is the life of Joseph. I guess there's a number of different reasons why I'd like to share this record with you today, but one of the biggest reasons is because it goes through his entire life and goes through all of these things that he went through. And as he goes through them, you would think that he could go a whole lot of different ways in his head, but he always stayed faithful. And Joseph's mentioned in Hebrews 11, which is the hall of fame of all saints, the Old Testament saints. They are the witnesses, the greater cloud of witnesses that came before us. Those are the great men and women. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but I want to show you this because the context of this greater cloud of witnesses in Hebrews 11 starts really in chapter 10. It starts in chapter 10 in verse 38. It says, "Now the just shall live by faith, but if thou draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul." This is, the context starts really from here and it goes all the way through to the end of chapter 12. And Jesus Christ is the ultimate example. But this is about how they lived, that they didn't quit. They didn't quit. They had patient endurance through whatever came into their life, and they dealt with it, and they maintained their faith. And that's where the emphasis is on how they lived in chapter 11. This verse is quoted in Habakkuk, if you can find it. It's towards the latter half. But it's just a couple of books from Malachi. But in Habakkuk, it says in verse 4, chapter 2, it says, "Behold, my soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith." You know, the context of the book of Habakkuk, you can't just take a verse and read it and say, I know what's going on. The context in Habakkuk is this prophet is a little bit ticked off, and he's going to go talk to God. And he knows he's going to get yelled at the time after he talks to God, but he wants an answer. All this injustice in the world, all this stuff that's going on, the evil, the wars, and God's not doing anything about it. What's going on with this? What's this about? That's what he wants to know from God. And God says to him, hey, chill. I'm going to give you a vision. And all the ears of them that hear it, they're going to curl. But the time is not yet. It's not going to happen just yet. But the just live by faith. Those guys, you hold on by your faith. Another place this is quoted is in Romans chapter 1. And again, there's a context to Romans. In Romans chapter 1, in verse 17, it says, "For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith." What is this faith that he's talking about? Well, the context of Romans is God has unfolded the gospel that Jesus Christ, it's really the entire gospel of Jesus Christ, what he has done, crucified, raised, and we are to have faith in what he has done. So Hebrews is talking about how he lives. That is the emphasis. Romans is talking about the emphasis is on having faith in the gospel. And then there's one more place where this quote from Habakkuk comes, and that's in chapter 3 of Galatians. Galatians chapter 3. And in verse 11, it says, "But that no man is justified by the law in the sight of God, it is evident, for the just shall live by faith." The context of the book of Galatians is that the believers were starting to move away from the gospel that was taught and made known in Romans, and they were starting to believe that they would be justified by their works, by doing the law. And by doing the law shall no man be saved. So the emphasis here is on you will be justified by faith. So even though these three places from Habakkuk are quoted, there's an emphasis on each and every place. And it's slightly different, but it's really important. So how did Joseph live? Let's go to Genesis 37. Because he is the individual that I want to focus on today. And as we go through this, I'll emphasize different points. But I really want you guys to read this record. It's from chapter 37 to chapter 50. So obviously I'm not going to be reading the 17 chapters. 17 chapters God has talking about Joseph. Do you think, kinda, that this is important? Maybe one guy? I think that, you know, there's so much. It's like Abraham. Abraham's talked about a tremendous amount in the scriptures, right? Isaac, Jacob, but Joseph gets 17 chapters, if my math is correct. Maybe it's not correct, but it's close. It says in verse 1, chapter 37, it says, "And Jacob dwelled in the land, wherein his fathers was a stranger in the land of Canaan. And these are the generations of Jacob. And Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren." He's 17. Some of you remember being 17, and some of you are. But the point is, he's 17 years old when all this starts out. Go to verse 3. "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors." He made him distinctive among his brethren. "And his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all the brethren, and they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more." You ever been in a family where you're not loved, or literally where you're hated? It's one thing to be ignored and another thing to be hated, right? Dysfunctional families aren't new on the earth. Dysfunctional families are a real everyday thing. Some of us are lucky, we got good families, and some of us weren't so lucky. But again, no excuses. We just started out. This guy's 17 years old, his dad loves him. In fact, he kind of testifies that you shouldn't play favorites with your kids. But he did. He loved them more than all the rest. He was smarter than all the rest. That shows up later on in his life. He's also more spiritual than all the rest. That shows up later on in his life. And his father gave him a distinction of wearing a coat of many colors, which he was, if you read the record, he was in charge of the management of the flocks. He was the boss. He was the foreman. amongst his family. But he wasn't too smart when it came to opening his mouth. You know, he wasn't really in depth of understanding. They don't like me, so maybe I ought to leave it alone. No, he has to tell them the dream. He has to open his mouth and say, I had a dream. This dream is a revelation from God, and God's going to bring it to pass at the end of his life. But towards the end of his father's life. But the point is, he opens his mouth and he tells this thing to his family. And the brethren hated him even more. They couldn't speak peaceably unto him. Verse 6, and he said unto them, hear, I pray you, the dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And lo, my sheaf arose and also stood right. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. They bowed to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shall thou indeed reign over us? I mean, they got it. They got the meaning. Shall thou indeed reign over us, or shall thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for the dreams and for his words. And then he tells his father about the dream, and his father gets upset with him. And then dad sends him out into the field. I want you to go check on your brothers and check on the flocks. So he's going off. He ends up going to Dothan. His brothers see him coming. Remember, he's got 11 brothers. He's the second to the youngest. Reuben is the eldest. So when you have that many kids in the family, there's an age spread here. Got lots of moms, so there might not be that much, but there's an age spread. And especially since these two, the youngest, were mentioned as Jacob had them in his old age. So all the others are men, middle-aged men. Except for the last two. And this kid, they hate him. And you imagine being hated enough that when your brothers see you coming, they're thinking about murdering you? You believe living in a family like this where the brothers would literally be thinking about murdering you? That's a serious dysfunctional family. I don't care how much the kid shoots his mouth off. I don't care how dumb he is when it comes to his personal relations with his brothers. It doesn't equal to murder. And yet, this is the children of Israel. These are going to be the 12 tribes. You want to talk about, you read this story, you realize that the grace of God. So Joseph goes, they grab him, they take his coat off, they throw him into a pit. He's screaming. It says later on, we had no mercy to hear his screams. They planned on killing him. Reuben shows up, said, nah, we shouldn't kill the kid. We shouldn't kill the kid. We don't want that. Let's sell him. Let's sell him into slavery. So the Moabites come by. They sell Joseph into slavery. He ends up in Potiphar's house. He's bought in the Egyptian Potiphar's house. They take his coat. They kill one of the kids. They kill one of the animals. They dip the coat in blood. They bring it back to his father, say, we don't know what happened. Now, this is one of the patriarchs, right? Jacob. These kids don't give a damn about their father. He starts mourning, and he won't be comforted. He won't be comforted for the rest of his life until he realizes Joseph's alive later on. This man suffers, and his boys don't care. They've done what they have done. They try to comfort him, but he won't be comforted. Years. Talk about cruelty. So life goes on. God switches from that household. Now God's got him in Potiphar's house. Potiphar gets this slave, 17-year-old boy, and this guy is good. And he makes him steward, the head man, the head businessman over his entire house. Because he's sharp. Like I said, he's smart. He's got business down. Relationship shoots off his mouth once in a while. Maybe he's going to learn his lesson. But the point is, he's smart. He's got ability. He's young. And Potiphar just thinks he's the best, so he puts him over the top of his house. And Potiphar, because of everything that Joseph does and everything that he touches, seems to prosper and is blessed. And then it says here, and go to chapter 39. In verse 1, it says, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh's captains of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him by the hands, bought him by the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down hither. And the Lord was with Joseph. And he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord hath made all that he did to prosper in his hands. And Joseph found grace in the sight, in his sight, and served him. And he made him overseer over all his house that he had put into his hands. His example of life. Now, where would your head be at? Let's just get real. Because that's what you got to do when you read the scriptures. If you don't do what I'm telling you right now, you're missing everything. You take, what would your feelings be like? You've just been thrown in a pit. You almost got murdered. You've been sold into slavery. You've been dumped by your own family. You've been ripped away from your father. And you end up in this guy's house, and it says, and the Lord was with him. You know why the Lord was with him? Because Joseph was still with the Lord. And God prospered everything he did. And everything that went on in his life, he didn't let the bitterness or the anger or the self-pity garbage that goes on in people's lives. You know, you can go one way or the other. Oh, woe is me. Or you can get really ticked off and say, you got an advantage over me. You're holding me down. Nobody holds you down except you. Nobody. You can be 17 years old, sold into slavery. You keep your head. You keep your integrity. You keep your end of the bargain here. The Lord is with him, and everything he touched, God turned to gold, for crying out loud. He prospered it. He prospered it. And even the Egyptian realized that the Lord was with him. What an example. He's got everything going. Now you got Mrs. Potiphar shows up on the scene. He's a 17-year-old, give or take now. I don't know how long he's been serving in the house, but he must be a heck of a good-looking piece of meat. Because Mrs. Potiphar is after him. Come on. Hey, Joseph, come on over. I want you to lie with me. Come on. The old man ain't around. Let's go. And he won't do it. She's pursuing him and pursuing him until one day she's continually pursuing him. And that's not easy, is it? This is not easy. It certainly ain't easy for a teenage boy. So One day she pursues him to such a point, nobody's in the house, just him and her. And she grabs a hold of him, grabs a hold of his clothes, and he does the only righteous thing he can do. He runs out and even leaves his clothes behind. So you don't want no part of this. And he says to her, what the heck is with you? My master's given me everything. He's put me over everything in his house. I'm in charge of everything. I got such a good life here. I'm doing a good job. And the only thing, why would you want me to commit such a sin against my master? Look at the loyalty, the integrity he's got. And he says, this is going to be a great, he's worried about what God thinks. They threaten to murder him, his own family. They threw him, sold him to sell. And this guy is walking with God. He's in, has integrity, and the Lord is blessing him. So Potiphar shows up. The wife says, hey, rape. He tried to rape me. Because she was so ticked at him for not sleeping with her. You're going to reject me like that? You're going down, baby. So he ends up in prison. So now, to add to his troubles and all of the wonderful things that's gone on in his life so far, we have falsely accused and imprisoned. And the keepers of the jail realize this guy is good. He can take care of all of our business here. He can manage the food. He can manage the prisoners. He can manage the whole thing. And they make him steward. You know, he's in jail. But they give him the job. And they don't have to do anything. They're so happy they don't have to work at all. And it says, and the Lord was with him. Again. Tell me that your circumstances in life dictate your spiritual reality. I got so many people that are tempted with this, including myself. Something really bad happens to you. Oh my God, how did God allow this to happen? And you think, well, he left me. Joseph don't think he left him. Joseph's got a relationship with him. I went from one bad deal to the next bad deal to the next. I had it really good, and then it turned bad again. And yet the Lord, he's walking with the Lord, and the Lord's walking with him. Well, no matter what's going on, people get sick. You get sick as a dog, you're going to die. Oh, maybe the Lord's not with me anymore. What happened? I got believers that are so silly sometimes. They say, oh, you must not be believing. No, it's just time to die. There is an end to everything. The clock runs out. Some people earlier, some people later. Same thing for opportunities. Oh, I had this really terrific thing for a job. I've been praying for it, and it doesn't happen. Well, pray for another one. It'll even be better, maybe. You can see an awful lot of this kind of thing when you look through his life, can't you? So he's in prison. He is top dog trustee, we call him. Top trustee in the prison. And he sees the baker, the Pharaoh's cup holder, and the baker. They show up and they're looking like they got thrown in jail. They're really not happy. And he says to the guard, what happened to these guys? He says, well, they were Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker. And he saw them and they looked troubled, and he says, what's going on? So the cupbearer says, well, I had a dream and I don't know the interpretation thereof. And what does Joseph say? You have just met the best guy in your whole life. No, he doesn't. He says, the interpretation of dreams belong unto the Lord. And he offers him the interpretation. because he gets the revelation from God again to interpret the dream. And in 3 days, you're going to be restored to your job. And by the way, when you get there, remember me. Remember me. And then the baker saw that this was a great interpretation, really worked out well. Hey, I got a dream too. He had a beautiful dream, a little different, but he had a beautiful one. Joseph said, well, the interpretation to this one is in 3 days, the Pharaoh's going to chop your head off and put your body out for display on a stick so the birds can eat it. This is something you really wanted to know. And sure enough, both things come to pass. And it says, and the cupbearer forgot Joseph. He just interpreted a dream. You were restored, and you forget this guy? There'll be a lot of people that'll forget about you, too. I don't know how many years went by. I do not know how old he is now. He was 17 when we started. He's been through the mill here a few times. And I got no idea how long he's been in jail. All I know is that 2 years later, Pharaoh has a dream. So I know it's 2 years since this guy's been restored to his job. Now Pharaoh gets the dream. And Pharaoh's upset. And you know what happens when Pharaoh gets upset? Everybody else in the house gets worried. Because if he looks at you the wrong way and doesn't like the way you look at him, your head's off. I don't know what the baker did, but I'm sure he burnt the cupcakes. You follow? Look at what God, 2 years. What can your mind do if you've been abandoned? God gives you this revelation. The people that he gave you the revelation for, the word came to pass for both of them. And then he forgot. And you're still rotting there, taking care of the business. I don't care if it's a real nice job. You're still in prison. Where would your head go? Where is the Lord? Where are you, God? Where would your head go? You know how long a couple years is? All of you do. It's a long time to be bored. And that's like the worst word in the world when you're young, right? Is nothing. You end up doing so many stupid things because I was bored. 2 years. Cupbearer finally says, oh, I remember now my fault. And he tells Pharaoh about the man who can interpret dreams. And go to Genesis 41. Verse 1 says, and it came to pass that at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And then it gives the dream. Verse 14, and Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and the cupbearer told him about it. Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment, and came unto Pharaoh. This guy is learning. You know, the Egyptians, you ever see the picture of the Egyptians or any of the statues, right? They got no hair. They shaved their head. They shaved their faces. The beard that they have, they're fake beards. They're not real. Okay, there's no such thing as facial hair on an Egyptian. It's repugnant to them. There's some people who like to take all their hair off. There's some people who like to stay that hairy. The Hebrews, beard, showed wisdom, you know, hair. They didn't shave, at least not much. Joseph, you're going to bring me into the presence of Pharaoh? I ain't going in looking like a slob. And I'm not going in looking like a Hebrew. I'm going to go in, dress the best that I can, and present myself in a very pleasing manner to this guy. Now, you know, the Senate just decided whether they were going to lower down the dress code in the United States Senate so the guy could wear his shorts and his hoodie. And I'm thinking to myself, I stand up here and I get dressed in a suit when I present God's word to you for respect's sake. Respect God, respect the word, respect what I do. I don't care how you're dressed. This is what I do. If I was going to go and walk into the office of the President of the United States and I didn't have a suit, I'd be going to whatever and buying one. Whether I like the guy or not. If you want to be taken serious in life, and especially those of you guys who are young, if you want to be taken serious in life, you better present yourself well. Because nobody wants a slob. Just a little education. You got slobs, you got a million of them. They come a dime a dozen. And you know what? People treat you the way they perceive you. You carry yourself with elegance, ladies, and they will treat you elegantly. You present yourself like trash. It's what it is. It's just human nature, isn't it? Joseph goes, he gets rid of his Hebrew, shaves his head, shaves his beard, puts on the kind of garments that an Egyptian would respect. Now he can't be rich because he's been in prison. But he's putting on Egyptian clothes. And he presents himself to Pharaoh, verse 14. And he shaved himself and he changed his raiment and came to Pharaoh in verse 15. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard said of thee that thou can't understand the dream and interpret it. I heard that you can do this. What does Joseph say? You better believe it, Pharaoh. I can take care of anything you want. I'm your man. Not what he does again. You know what he does? He's going to give Pharaoh, first of all, he lowers himself, esteems, gives God the glory and the credit and the honor. He humbles himself. And then at the end of this, he tells Pharaoh the solution to the problem and what the Pharaoh needs to do, and asks for nothing. You know, would you let me out of jail if I tell you what to do? Would you let me go free, go back to my family, or go someplace else? He doesn't have, he just offers what the God gives him. He offers it freely to the Pharaoh. And Joseph answered, verse 16, Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh the answer, an answer of peace. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, in my dream, and he gave him the dream. And again, Joseph freely gives him the answer. Go to chapter 43. Pharaoh says, is there anybody... After he interprets the dream, there are going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, and it's established it's going to happen. And what you ought to do is set a man over all of Egypt that can collect 1/5 of everything that comes in the 7 plenty years and store it so that you'll have to eat in the 7 famine years. Just 1/5. Where'd that number come from? Just over the top of his head? God, gives you the wisdom what to do. And the Pharaoh says, is there anybody else that knows a man where who the Spirit of the Lord is here? I mean, Pharaoh sees this. This is a guy with the Spirit of God. He puts him, he goes from being a prisoner in the dungeon of Egypt to second in command of the nation. And the only one above him is the Pharaoh himself. And he handles the affairs the same way, the same righteous way with Pharaoh's nation as he handled it with the house, as he handled it with his father's sheep. He was a man of integrity. He was an individual who had wisdom, good work ethic, obviously. He could think. I mean, some of us got more brains than others. I get that. But this guy could think. And he could organize. He didn't allow any of those negative emotions that he could have had to ruin his life. There are so many people who have ruined their life so much more than anybody else ruined it. Just because they won't cut the negatives out. Oh, they kept me back, so I'll never do well. If you believe that, you got it. Out of your mouth is your own judgment. I'm not talking about positive thinking. I'm talking about controlling one's thinking. Joseph didn't allow any of that. So then guess what happens? This drought, and by the way, it's not climate change. These things have been happening for centuries. So the new religion that we have today, I know everything is that. But that is what it is now. It's what it's become. It's not about stewardship. It's about a new religion. And if you don't believe it, you should be crucified. Stewardship is good. Crucifying people is not. Just because they don't agree. Just lived a little longer. Pharaoh gives him in charge of everything. He starts doing the plan. He starts making it happen. And all of a sudden, this famine gets sore so that even the land of Canaan and all the lands round about, they're all suffering. And Jacob says to his 10 sons, I want you to go to Egypt. I hear there's corn there. Go buy it. They go. They travel. They take their money with them. And guess what? Joseph sees them, and he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. Why? Because he's probably all pretty, and he's got no hair. And he's also grown up a little bit more. And you know, Joseph doesn't throw them in jail and execute them. He's got the right. He's second in command of all Egypt. He can take vengeance right now. But that's not what's in his heart. That's not what's in the man's heart. He's got God in his heart. God has been with him, and he's been walking with God. He's in a situation he didn't want to be in, but he's just walking with God. So he has a little fun with his brothers. He sees them, he sells them the grain, and then he sticks the money into one of their sacks, right? And he sends them out, sends out his guys to follow him because somebody took the cup and they took the money and brings them back and makes them all bow. Actually, they bow a little later on too, but they all bow to him. They don't recognize him. And they say, where's your father? How's the father doing? He loves his dad. How's he doing? You got a younger brother? He loves Benjamin too. And he starts talking to him, playing, but he doesn't play his hand. And he says, okay, you're all spies, you're all liars, so I want you to prove this to me. Go and bring your younger brother back here. All of you can go with the food, but you bring your younger brother back here. And they say, we can't. Our father won't let him come with us. He's afraid that he'll lose him too, like he lost the other one that's not anymore, Joseph. They don't know they're talking to the man that they wanted to kill. So they all go back. They tell Jacob what's going on. Jacob says, nope, he ain't going. He kept Simeon back. So Simeon's up for grabs. Pop, I ain't sending Benjamin. You know, Jacob's got a real problem with who he likes and who he don't like among his own children. But it might be true because at the end of their lives, he prophesies over each and every one of them, and some of them are just, the prophecy is not good. They come back with Benjamin, and Joseph is like all ripped up inside. He just can't withhold himself. He falls. He makes himself known to them. You know, he does this a few more times, but he makes himself eventually known to them. And they all bow, all of his brothers. And then later on, his father also will bow to him. And then Joseph comes up with a remarkable thing. It's a remarkable truth. It's in 45. Genesis 45. Can you see the parallels to your life and things that you can learn and take wisdom from and glean here? If you walk with God, don't matter what your circumstances are. If you walk with God and you're serving Him and loving Him and just doing your best and taking care of your business properly and working hard and with integrity, there's nothing you can't do. There's nothing that you can't become, and there's nothing that you can't overcome. You go the other way, you start being like you start whining. You ain't going nowhere. You sit on the stoop for the rest of your life. You know, I got a stoop that I used to sit on when I was a kid. You know what a stoop is? Yeah, you guys in Queens, you guys in Long Island know what a stoop is? So there was a stoop. Me and my friends, we'd all hang out on the stoop. In fact, I think we literally, in the stone steps, we probably made our imprint. We sat there so long. Right? And then about 30 years later, after I left and came back, I drove down the street, and there was one of my friends. He was still sitting on the stoop 30 years later. And I thought to myself, I hope he did better than this. You walk with God, God will prosper you. He will help you. No matter how much people hate you, no matter what the heck is going on around you, you walk with Him, He'll take care of you. It may be very different circumstances than what you think is the way it's supposed to be. But God will never leave you. And He will never forsake you. And God's got a plan. God has spent all these chapters focusing on one kid. And there's a reason. Because in 45, verse 5, it says, "Now therefore, be not grieved," Joseph's talking to his brothers, "nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 more to come. There are 5 years, for which you shall neither be earning nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you and the posterity on the earth, and to save your lives by the great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And He hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and a lord of all his house, and the ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." He finally understood. After all these years, Joseph, when he saw his brothers, when he saw the situation, when he saw this whole thing, he said, "You know what? This is God that's done this to me. God is the one that wanted me to come here before you all and put me in a place where I can save the entire nation of Israel, all his father's house, and all of their children, and keep them all alive and preserve them. You know why? Because they're such nice people? No, most of them are a bunch of bums. They're a bunch of no good bums. But you know what's in them? The coming Christ. Christ comes out of the line of Judah. God's going to get done what God wants done. You've spent your whole life, and I've spent my whole life. I know what I've done in my life. Mary and I, our kids, I know what God has done for us. I know the decisions that we have made. You know the decisions that you have made. I have no regrets. It didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. Didn't happen the way I thought it was going to happen. I was just blessed to get in God's Word, to learn about Him. And I was just going to, you know, we went to the college in the 7th Corps. We went into the Way Corps, spent 2 years. And then I had a job. I was asked to go to Connecticut. And I had a job lined up to be a garbage man, a sanitation engineer, and walk behind the truck and run my fellowship at night. That was my plan. That would have been glorious to me. I had spent my time learning the Word that I love so much, walking with my Father. I had a job. I could take care of my wife, and we'd be running a fellowship in Connecticut. That's not how it worked out. I go to the graduation. It's graduation. It's last week. You know, and after that, they sent you out. So I had everything lined up. I go to that graduation, and Dr. Worrell, the man in charge of the ministry at that time, Dr. Worrell calls me over, and I got Vince Finnegan on one side of him and Craig Martindale on the other side of him. And Dr. Worrell says to me, I want you to go to the state of Alabama and run the limb there. You know, the state of Alabama, be the coordinator there. And I said, somebody gave you the wrong information, Doc. All right, I didn't do that good in this thing. You know, no, this is not a good idea. Thanks anyhow. He says, no, I really want you to do it. No, thanks anyhow. And Finnegan on one side and Martin, they're both doubled over laughing. Nobody turns down this thing. Nobody does this. I was fighting with him because I did not want to embarrass God, and I certainly did not want to embarrass him or the ministry. And I wasn't qualified, and my own mind never was. And I said to him, the final thing that I said to him, I said, well, I'll do it if you tell me it's the Lord. And he says to me, it's the Lord, son. Talked in that Ohio accent. So I went, you know, and I was scared stiff. This is not how I wanted. I figured this is going to be a real temporary job. I get an apartment in Hoover, Alabama. Get a one or two bedroom apartment in Hoover. We got 9 boxes, a car, and I got a wife. Put the 9 boxes in the apartment. And I'm supposed to have all these WOW ambassadors are supposed to call me. So I got a phone number. Several of them don't call at all. And I got the guys in Ohio calling me. Where are these people? I don't know where these people are. You sent them to the cities. I don't have a phone number. So I'm pacing. Days go by. I'm pacing back and forth. You know, God, this was a big mistake. I don't know why. You know, Dr. Worrell sent me here. I got no reason to. This is just crazy. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I don't know what I did wrong. But it's not working out well. And I got Ralph and Vince yelling at me, where are these people? You're in charge down there. I'm in charge of what? So then God says to me out of the blue, he says, I want you to go to Gadsden. What? I'm just walking back and forth in my apartment. It's almost sundown. I don't even know where Gadsden is. To go to Gadsden, that's where one of the families was sent. And to make a long story short, I want you to understand this. This is how God confirmed to me that I was supposed to do what I did. So I go to the 7-Eleven, I get a McNally road map. There was no such things as cell phones, and there was no such things as GPS. This is 1979. Get the road map, find out where Gadsden is, go to Gadsden, get on the highway, go on Interstate 20, and I am going, and I am saying to myself, you're out of your mind, McCabe. You got no idea what you're doing. You're going to drive 2.5 hours to get to this town. And then what? It's a town of 50,000 people. What are you going to do then? Jerk. You've talked yourself into thinking that God told you to go to Gadsden. And I'm driving, and the sun's coming down, and Alabama gets dark at night. All right? There ain't nothing but cows. And I'm going down the road, go down the road, go down the road. And I'm trying it to my, I'm doing, but I'm not believing that this is right. I am criticizing myself to death, thinking that you're the biggest fool that there is. Then all of a sudden, I see this big sign says Rainbow City. And it just lights up. You know, it's like you had the brights on, except it was twice as much. And I'm inspired to get off. I said, this ain't Gadsden. This is Rainbow City. So I turn off the exit, come to the stop sign, and there's nothing. Pitch dark, cows over there. Cows over here and cows over there. I turn right, go down 4 or 5 miles down an old country road. I get to a traffic light. Thank God. I'm thinking to myself, there's electricity here. And there's a Waffle House or an omelet shop, I don't remember, on the far left-hand corner. All right, I'm going there. Got myself a cup of coffee, and I think I got something to eat. And I'm like the only person in this thing. It's close to 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, or 11:30, between 11:30 and 1 o'clock in the morning. And you're a jerk. You're an idiot. Get done messing around there. Stayed there as long as the people started to think I was going to spend the night. And turn right out of the thing, and Gadsden is 10, 15 miles. I can see the city lights down there. And this is Rainbow City. So I turn right. I go down about 3/4 of a mile, and there's a 7-Eleven on the left. You know what? I thought to myself, I'd get another cup of coffee. I am trying very hard just to bleed off time here, because I have no confidence in what I'm doing. So I turn into the 7-Eleven. I get out of the car, a little crowd of people over here to my left. And I open the door to the 7-Eleven, and I hear the young lady who's talking on the phone, and she says, "Can I please talk to John McCabe?" And I said, "I'm right here." These are the people that I was looking for. So I go to the place that they are, I teach them the Bible, sleep over their place that night. God says to me in the morning, "Go to Montgomery." I don't have time to tell you all the story. He directs me. Get to Montgomery. I ain't got this much money for this trip, right? So I'm burning. I got an old Ford 8-cylinder, and it's using gas, and I ain't got much money in my pocket. So I go to Montgomery. I go down to the main police station in downtown Montgomery. I walk up to the sergeant's desk and he says, "Boy, what can I do for you?" And sheepishly I say to him, "Well, I'm looking for these 12 young people who've come here as missionaries, and they're here to hold forth the Bible, and I'm not sure where they live. Have you heard anything about it?" Now, Montgomery's a town of 300,000. All right? This guy is looking at me like, "You belong in a Looney Tunes." And the guy behind him, the man behind him, the other cop behind him, turns around and said, "You know, I met a whole group of young people like that, and they gave me this card, and this is their address." And I said, "Can you give me directions how to get there?" He'd be happy to. They were a nice bunch. I go there, and there they are. Then he said, "Go to Anniston," you know. And then he told me to go to Dothan. And by the time I was done with the trip, every place I went, oh, by the way, on my way to Anniston, I stopped at a McDonald's and got myself a fries because I needed a little bit of gas, and all I had left was enough to buy a 50-cent pack of fries. I'm eating my fries, relaxing a little bit, and some guy walks up to me and says, "Are you Ellen Herring's replacement?" That was the person I was replacing. And they said, "Yeah. Yeah, I live in Birmingham, and I know Ellen. I saw the car. I figured it was you. So I want you to do me a favor and take this couple $100 and put it in the abundant sharing. I had gas money to get home." I've never doubted. I didn't believe this was right. Didn't believe I belong doing what I'm doing. I never have. I've never been foolish enough to think that I was qualified for the job. Never, ever. But the Lord God Almighty proved to me, and I've never doubted it since that day, since that event, that He wanted me to do what I'm doing. Again, it never worked out the way I thought it was going to work out. Life didn't go as smooth as I thought it was supposed to go. We've been through tragedies and blessings and deliverances. We've gone through a lot of different things. I thought when you're walking with God, everything's supposed to go nice. It doesn't. Look at Joseph's life. Look at this man. He's running everything. But you know what is really the most important thing God liked about Joseph's life? Go back to Hebrews 11. And I want you to read the record. Please, take the time. Of all of the faithfulness, the integrity, the revelation that he received, the mighty works, the deliverance that Joseph did with his father, God Almighty, or with God Almighty at his direction, with the tremendous abilities that he had, the salvation of the people of Israel because he was there, the sacrifice that he went through, the hardships that he went through, the faithfulness that he showed, the forgiveness that he showed his brothers. None of that is important to God. It's not what's highlighted in Joseph's life. You know what's highlighted in Joseph's life? Verse 22. It says, "By faith Joseph, when he died, he made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones." That's it. And I thought to myself years ago, I thought when I read this, what the heck is this all about? When you read the record, you realize that when Joseph saw his father made him swear, "I want you to put your hand under my thigh and swear to me that you're going to bury me with Abraham and Sarah, with my wife over there, because of the promise that God made to Abraham, that he's going to inherit the earth. And I want to be in the resurrection. I want to see Abraham when I'm there. And Joseph, at the end of his life, in chapter 50, it says in Genesis chapter 50, Joseph, at the end of his life, gave commandment. He said, God is going to take you out of Egypt. You know, right now, they're living high in the hog. They're in the best of the land. God has blessed them. They're multiplying. These guys are like forever. The pharaohs treat them well during Joseph's lifetime. But Joseph ends up, just like everybody else, it's time for him to die. In verse 22, it says, and Joseph dwelt in Egypt, and he in his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children, and the third generation, and the children also of Meskar, the son of Manasseh, were brought up upon Joseph's knees. He had the joy of seeing three generations of grandchildren. I get to see mine. And Joseph said unto his brothers, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land unto a land which he sware to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from hence. So Joseph died. The one thing of that whole life that we just considered and all the greatness of it and all the beauty of it, the one thing that God was so proud of with Joseph and put him in the Hall of Fame is he knew that he would take the children of Israel out of Egypt, that God would do it, and that he gave commandment concerning his bones so that he would be buried in the land of promise. He looked for the hope. No matter what, how great, how mediocre your life is, you're a Hall of Famer if you're looking to the hope. No matter what goes on, God is with you as long as you're with him. No matter what goes on, you keep your integrity. If everybody else loses theirs, and it don't matter if they all hate you, you just keep yours. These are lessons that you can learn from this great man in the Word. I love you.